Anything else on academics that I'm not aware of? If not, that concludes the Select Committee's agenda items for today. Next, we move to the Budget Committee. Chair Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have five action items and a number of informational items, so we'll do the same thing that you did previously. Ann, I'll let you start. We can just do one at a time, and then we'll make a motion.
I feel like that was a hard act to follow.
Yeah, that is.
I'm here to maybe share with you stellar financial acumen, and maybe you'll applaud at the end.
I will.
You know, one of these times I'm gonna slip something into the agenda that is going to be a little more stimulating than our audits.
I'll try my
best.
But
you know, the good news is that they're always clean, and I'm sure that's reason to applaud. So moving forward into the agenda. While we can handle these as individual votes, we have three routine audits.
I believe that's right, but probably procedurally we should address each individually and then vote on it.
Okay. Did you want to start
you go
with
ahead
the first,
with the first one,
or let me go?
You go ahead.
All right. So your first agenda item is the accountant's report on application of agreed-upon procedures, the NCAA compliance report. And what I'm going to do, obviously you have a bound copy of the report, a very detailed compliance report, and I'll turn it over to Pete Hugo from Crowe Horwath to make remarks about the, not quite an audit, but a compliance report.
Thank you. Good morning. I think I've met many of you before, but I'm Pete Hugo, and I'm the audit partner at Crowe Horwath, who serves your engagement. And this meeting is focused on the deliverables that you have, the first one being the NCAA report. This is what's called an agreed-upon procedures report, so it is not an audit. Rather, it is compliance testing based on some specific procedures that the NCAA has outlined for schools to have tested by an external audit firm. The procedures were revised quite a bit this year, so if you were to compare this to last year's report, you would see there are some additional steps and some steps that have been changed. The basic structure of this report is that on pages 2 and 3, this is the schedule of your revenue and expenses for the athletic department, and this lists out the line numbers are all prescribed by the NCAA so they can do some comparisons between various institutions. So this lists all the revenue and expenses. And then beginning on page 5 back through page 18 are all of the prescribed procedures that the NCAA requires us to perform. So you'll see if you read through these, they're separated by section of different types of revenue, different types of expenditures, explanations of variances from one year to the next. And most of these, as you can see, have no exceptions noted, or there is an explanation provided for any specific lines that require an explanation. There are no concerning or unusual responses resulting from our tests, and there are some supplemental schedules at the end that provide a little bit more detail on some of the revenue and expense items. So this process went smoothly, and we'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
No questions, then I'll entertain a motion to approve action item FB1 from the committee. Anybody?
Motion.
Thank you. Motion by Regent Ridley. Second. Dave, you want to say? Barbara, I'm sorry. Regent Birch, seconded. Any further discussions, questions on FB1? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? FB1 carries unanimously. And FB2?
FB2, the audit reports and financial statements for both our public TV, public radio programs. And Pete, I'll let you.
Certainly.
proceed.
So I can cover both of these reports together, but would happy to answer any questions on the individual reports that you may have. These are standalone audit reports for your radio and television stations. These are required by Corporation for Public Broadcasting as a result of the funding that you receive from them. So the radio and TV financials are not separate legal entities. They are operating units within the university. So these opinions and the footnotes do indicate that this is an excerpt of an activity within the university. It's not meant to be the entire entity. The main change that I would reference in these reports compared to prior year is similar to the discussion I had a few months ago related to the university's overall financial statements, and that is the implementation of GASB Statement 68 on pension liabilities. That statement requires that if you are issuing an audit like this that is a portion of the overall university, you're required to allocate the share of the pension liability that relates to this. So both radio and TV have went through with your management a calculation of allocating that liability to radio and television, and so your financial statements have been updated to reflect their share of the pension liability. The audit opinions on these are unmodified or clean opinions. The only matter that's emphasized is the fact that the GASB 68 statement was implemented this year, and then there's a reference to some supplemental information related to the pension liabilities. Aside from that, the balance sheet and income statement activity is comparable from year to year for both of these. We completed these audit reports, and then we also are required to complete certifications directly with the Corporation for Public Broadcasting in order for you to receive your continued funding, and that has all been complete. These processes went smoothly as well, and we appreciate management's assistance in providing the information needed for the audits. The GASB 68 work was a significant undertaking for your staff to prepare all of that information. I'd be happy to answer any questions on those reports as well.
Just one comment on the pension liability issue, which is now mandated. That's what appears on your balance sheet there on page 8, just for everybody's reference.
Correct.
Okay.
I would like to give David Brinkley, Director of Educational Telecommunications, just a couple of minutes.
Absolutely.
To tell you a little bit about, I think, what GASB adjustment does is hide some of the successes that have happened in the private sector in giving and corporate sponsorship.
Appreciate it. Just a couple of things to highlight that may not be mentioned on here. Business and industry underwriting and in-kind support for radio was up 42% from the previous fiscal year and up 460% on the television side. Subscriptions and membership were up 13% on the radio side and up 80% on the television side. And some of that has to do with some significant in-kind contributions that we've had, also increased solicitation. We had some significant financial support tied to the cooking and lifestyle program. You all toured our studio facility, and that turned into a $62,000 financial arrangement. Lost River Sessions, a new program that we offer in public television, which is now also on radio, has garnered a $30,000 multi-year commitment. We had a campaign for autism awareness that brought in a $15,000 single contribution. And an adoption documentary was a $25,000 anonymous gift. And these are all just from the previous fiscal year. So these increases have come based on our increased solicitation to help offset some of the decreases in overall revenue. But overall, we're up. And our net position at the beginning of each of the last 3 years has increased in a combined effort from 13 to 15, 3.3 million, 3.6 million, and 3.9 million overall prior to the implementation of GASB.
Thank you.
That's applause.
Yeah, that is applause.
That's okay.
That's right, we have to.
One quick thing, too. If we're beta testing radio station 97.5 FM. Several people in our community have requested that we bring classical music back as a separate format. So if you tune your radios to 97.5 FM, you will hear classical music coming out once again with no additional capital expense request from the university. And in a couple of months, we will also launch 102.9 FM, Frankfurt. So we will have a station in the city of Franklin in Franklin County based on the translator donation last year.
Wow.
Good.
That's great.
97.
Any other comments, questions? Anne, I'm sorry, did I?
No, I was just putting that 97.5 in my data bank because I'm glad to have classical.
Can I ask the auditor a question?
Yes, sir.
The Gadsby 68, when you do the data research and backtest this, are you looking at age bands and the liability, or is it strictly a percentage of what the overall liability is for each department?
For each department, it's an allocation based on payroll as a percentage of total payroll.
Thank you.
Anything else? I'll entertain a motion for approval of action item FB number 2.
So move.
Second.
And seconded by Regent Ridley. Any further discussions, comments? Being none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Number 3, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much. And number 3?
Your next agenda item is to accept the filing of the second quarter statement of revenue and expenses that takes you from July through December. As your agenda item states, there aren't variances that are unusual or any concerns to bring to the board. Again, since this only reflects tuition and fees through the fall semester, and your tuition and fee revenue would include billing for some spring, but not all of it. It doesn't give you a full picture of necessarily where we are. By the time we meet again, we'll be significantly far along in the year that you'll see that the financial picture includes a slight decline from budget in tuition and fees. Overall, I'm projecting that we could come in approximately 1%, slightly better than 1%, maybe 1.2%, 1.3% off of the budget estimate for the year, which isn't that bad. Mm-hmm. For that type of variance, it's approximately $2 million, and I think that we will miss the tuition estimate centrally. I'm not concerned about that amount in terms of a budget reduction. We have identified a majority of that amount already on the expenditure side. The largest source will in fact be under expenditures in institutional scholarships. When we budget for scholarships, I don't think a crystal ball or anything else will help you determine the actual acceptance rates on your awards. We have longitudinal data, but still human behavior. So it does turn out that we had slightly less acceptance rates on our scholarships, which then helps offset on the revenue side the loss of tuition revenue. So the only challenge we have now will be if in fact the session ends and there is no relief in a 4.5% reduction in state funding. That we will know because, as we've indicated before, we get quarterly allotments from the state, and it's in April is the fourth quarter. So we'll see if the directive is that the fourth quarter allotment, in fact, is reduced by approximately $3.4 million. So once we know that variable finitely, President and Administrative Council will develop a plan that will allow us to have no deficit by June 30th. Can I answer any questions?
Anybody got any questions?
Just clarification. We are well down that road at this point. We just need to know what the final number is. I mean, we won't start figuring out a plan once we learn the number. We have an option and a game plan just to make it dramatic. Current year cut will end up being. I mean, Ann's been working on this for some time, so.
Well, we, in some regard, you can look at the reduction as a one-time reduction or a recurring permanent reduction. The strategies for both could differ. Mm-hmm. That's probably where we have less certainty moving forward. To what degree that a permanent solution, in fact, can be implemented in a relatively short amount of time, given that the reduction happens in April and fourth quarter, institutional flexibility is significantly diminished.
And it'll be a combination of both, with only 3 months left in the fiscal year. We'll have to shore it up with some one-time money and make recurring cuts, but three-fourths of the year's behind us, and so the recurring cuts will really go into effect July 1, and we'll balance with non-recurring sources.
Anything further? I'll entertain a motion for approval of action item FB number 3.
I so move the acceptance.
Regent Porter's moved. Second?
Second.
Regent Ridley seconded. Any further discussions, comments?
I have one.
Okay.
It's a shame to hear a presentation that we just had about how we can retain students, make them more successful at the university, and then at the same time we've got to cut large amount of funding, whereas we really need to be shoving more money to these areas that are more successful. So I think it's really a sad day that we've got to cut great programs or great things just so that we can shore up a three-month.
Well, it was a surprise.
It certainly is.
Anything further? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. The last action item is, second to last. Action item number 4, personnel actions. I think everybody has received a copy of the proposed personnel action items in their packets, and I don't know, Ann, if there's anything specifically to say or if there's any questions.
Only to highlight that the approval of the faculty staff personnel actions does include faculty and promotion, tenure, and tenure recommendations, okay, which is a significant approval.
Anybody have any questions or comments? And I'll entertain a motion to approve FB number 4.
So moved.
Okay. I'll take one as a motion by Regent Ridley and a second by Regent Porter. Any further comments, discussions on the motion? There being none, I'll call for a vote. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? No opposition. Motion carries unanimously. Action item number 5, Ann.
Yes, sir. Approval of revisions to the 15-16 operating budget, where we have surplus revenue and are coming back to you for approval to expend these funds. Some of these items weren't quite ready to be budgeted in the beginning of the fiscal year. Others are changes in programs and success where we have generated additional revenue. As we have done with budget revisions, your page 6 tells you the source, and your page 7 identifies how the funds will be allocated. I've had some subsequent questions about some of these allocations, and let me clarify on the top of page 7, international student recruitment expenses does include the instructional costs associated with programs that are on the left side, the Indian tuition and the pathway program. So while we didn't break it out between divisions, international enrollment management program receives part of the funding, but academic affairs allocation is in fact in that one line. It's a little bit technical, but I thought I'd go ahead and add that to my description of the proposed uses, and I can answer any questions about these items.
Anyone have any questions? Regent Birch?
Question or concern. I did ask about this, and I've still got the concern. I noticed that $414,800 of this money is going to a WKU pathway program. And in fact, we have online advertising a WKU pathway program as an we speak.
Mm-hmm.
But we've never approved a WKU pathway program. We had a Navitas academic program in place that was approved. We have never approved a pathway program, and it shows the pathway program reporting to the enrollment management office. So we have an academic program that has not been approved to a staff position, and this is a concern. I'm in favor of creating a pathway program, but we do not have one that has been created or approved. Now, I'm assuming what this is probably the leftover Navitas students that have to be processed through. But we should not be having on our site an advertised program, not approved, academic program reporting to a staff position. And I did consult with Ann, and I guess you, Gary, and Provost Lee about this. So I think we need to find a way to move the students through who are the leftover Navitas, but we should not be advertising as a WKU pathway program that has not been approved, and it should not be managed by a staff person in international enrollment management.
Well, a couple of points of clarification. I think it's a matter of semantics. We've had a pathways program since 2010. Even though Navitas ran it, it was our pathway program. It wasn't Navitas program, it was ours, our faculty. And we're simply transitioning out of the Navitas contract to continue to have, we'll have a pathways program for years to come. We will recruit students into our own pathways program. Now, if the board needs to approve something we've been doing since 2010, we can do that, but that seems curious to me, but we can do that at our next meeting. That's easy enough. Our international enrollment management recruits the students, but academic affairs handles the faculty, the curriculum. It's an academic program that has nothing to do with, once the students are here, with IEM. So I'm not sure you're painting an accurate picture there. This is our pathways program. It has been for years, and it will be for years, and we'll recruit students into it, and academic affairs will manage the curriculum.
Gary, I wish I could agree with you.
But I
think that's an accurate picture. The Pathways program with Navitas was an approved partnership program with Navitas. It was located on WKU's campus, and it was Navitas at WKU, and that's how it was approved, and that's how we even informed SACS about it, okay? And I am not suggesting that we bring whatever our program is now to this board. I'm suggesting that if we're going to have a program, it go where all academic programs go. It go through the faculty, and it be approved as a program. Now, when Navitas was approved, there were some peculiar, very different kinds of delivery systems. There were differences in staffing. And at this point, I don't know that anyone on the faculty has any idea. I don't know whether the provost office does, about what the curriculum is or how it's being run. We have a staff person in IEM who is the pathways director, and this was just arbitrarily done. And I'm not bringing this all by myself. I think you're going to hear from Senate on it. But we do not have a unique program that we created and put in place, and I think we should call it for what it is. It's a Navitas completer program, and I think it should be under the management of academics.
Well, it is, and I'll have Provost Lee come back to the board at our next meeting and make a presentation. If you want to take action, great. That'll be up to the board.
I would like something to be done to know that this is not going to sit there the rest of the year, not under academic supervision, and it is not under academic supervision. There has not been a proposal
yet. The provost would disagree with you because it's our faculty that. David will report back to the board in our next meeting, and he'll clarify the academic control over the pathways.
Can we postpone this then till the next meeting, the pathways part of it?
I will say that I'm not inclined to want to postpone a vote on this simply because I think these are two different issues that are being raised right now, Barbara. If in fact we need to address whether we do or do not have a pathways program, I think that can be accomplished at the next meeting, and that certainly is. As President Ransdell has indicated, we can bring the provost in and we can have that discussion. I think this discussion is outside the line of the money. or the proposed revisions.
Which program is operating right now, and we have students in it, and our faculty are teaching it, and Academic Affairs is providing that oversight, and but the financial variable does need to be addressed.
I think the financial variable does, and I think it's a different topic that's being discussed.
These expenditures are happening and have happened since January. We have employees that are being paid. We have faculty that are being paid. You can run a deficit and cover it later, but
funds
need to be allocated.
It's a different issue, and I'm okay about the money part. The thing I want to note that I'd like to be discussed is that we have an academic program that has not been approved and is not under supervision of academics. The second thing, Mr. Chairman, that I'd like to suggest is that when we're looking at this, is that we get some idea. I'm curious about the fact that we did the India project largely to bring in a lot of new revenues, but the bulk of the money coming in from the India project is being eaten up with additional faculty for teaching supplementary classes that these students need to help them with language skills and reading and other things. We paid a significant amount, $2,500 per person recruited, only to find that while these were fine students in their academic disciplines, we largely brought students, the majority of whom would not have met our criteria for being able to be successful in terms of their verbal skills. And we know that. And I'm just concerned about a hugely expanding international recruitment budget and how we're doing this. And so I'm happy to let the money go for this time, but I'd like to bring back to the next meeting about the Pathway Program and about the nature of the operations in IEM in the time in terms of the students we're bringing. If we bring students that it cost us as much to help them be successful as we generate in tuition, while we're paying that kind of expense to
the
others.
First year, just we'll get more clarification on that. But the first year, I do know, includes some one-time expenses related to recruitment, so that the full value of them continuing at WKU, the revenue will be significantly more moving forward. And all we're asking for expenditure authority is that which is necessary for Academic Affairs to cover their costs. There's graduate scholarships, and then there's the international enrollment management expenses. There are funds that will accrue centrally, and they'll be available to offset the tuition that I described.
Well, I'll also make a presentation at the next meeting and answer any questions that you have.
I think that's the appropriate way to handle that. So I'm gonna call for a motion on FB number 5. Approval of FB number 5. Regent Porter's moved.
Second.
Regent Ridley, second. Discussions or comments on FB number 5? There being none, I'll call for a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. That is the end, I believe, of the action items, and we now have some informational items, Anne.
Yes. The first one is I believe we communicated with you, you authorized Finance and Administration and myself as Treasurer of the Board to proceed with a refunding of existing bonds. That happened in February, and the bond sale actually was finalized in March. We're pleased to report a very successful refunding, where we're estimating that the average savings per year will be about $150,000 per year until the final maturity in 2027. The board set an expectation that refunding was the right strategy if you had a savings of 5%, and this savings actually net present value savings came in at 5.75. So the market was very favorable for this refunding, and I'm pleased with our financial advisor and the work of our CFO to have been on top of capturing this opportunity. The second part of this agenda item is to update you is any time that you do a refunding or issuing bonds that the rating agencies come back in and scrutinize your balance statements and trends as it relates to enrollment, private giving, and state funding especially. So while we've got a lengthy explanation for why Standard & Poor's, in fact, did lower our ratings slightly, it obviously wasn't enough of concern in terms of the market and our ability to refund these bonds. But obviously, it ties back to Mr. Ridley's comment. The financial liability of the pensions and lack of stability in state funding is one variable that the rating agencies do take into consideration when they do our bond ratings. Jim Cummings, CFO, handled the details of both the rating calls and the bond sale, and I commend him for doing an exceptionally good job, and if you have any questions, I know who to go to.
Anybody have any questions on any of the issues on this particular informational item?
Go ahead.
Sure.
What's likely to happen to our ratings down the road if, in fact, we have this proposed cut from as the Senate and the governor are suggesting right now? I mean, I know you're not a crystal ball person, but I mean,
you know,
the comments talk about our continued
You know, we have established a debt management advisory committee, and we're going to have some more lengthy discussions about what the rating agencies are looking at for trends. An interesting variable in this, Dr. Birch, is our own carry forward policy, where balances generated by divisions are in fact returned to divisions for as almost an investment back in them, but we also know that we have a lot of non-recurring expenses and recurring expenses on one-time money. But to the degree that you return these balances back to the divisions to be expended, that lowers what the rating agencies see as your reserves for covering these fluctuations in state funding and enrollment. So it's a sort of a double-edged sword there. We know how important those balances are, but the rating agencies are seeing that we have less capacity to cover our debt. Now, do we have any issues about covering our debt? Absolutely not. And I think the bond sales reflect that. And we're still in, that's an A-minus and a double A's, and we're still in a very, very solid bond category as far as a rating goes. But this is probably, several board members can comment on it, a reflection of the financial climate that these rating agencies have to be very, very careful about what they release and what their evaluations show. But we do have trends that show our decline in our reserve capacity. We're spending our one-time money down. Mm-hmm. We're having budget cuts, which cause us to spend those reserves down. So it will have an impact, but at this point, I don't see that it's significant from a rating agency standpoint.
I will. I'm sorry. Did you want to say something?
I was queuing up. Karen will probably be taking a break in a little bit.
Okay. Didn't realize what that was. I agree with what you're saying, Ann. I have a little bit of experience with this. I think there are a couple or more than a couple of things that rating agencies look to. When they see significant cuts that are coming our way, or any university in this state, they're going to want to look at how we balance our budget. They're going to look at the intercept program. They're going to look at a variety of things, how our budget compares to our debt capacity and how we address it. They will look significantly at our debt policy, which you mentioned a minute ago. I agree. I don't necessarily see some more underlying ratings going down, and we'll still be able to attach to the state's rating, although that may go down too. But I concur with what you're saying. I see that. You probably see some.
Two significant things that you brought up is, number one is that, and I do want us to be sure that, and this is within the ability of the university and those that contain their manage their own budget, and that is this idea that we have incentivized many departments throughout the university to create revenue streams, and it is returned back to that department as an incentive. Through all the programs, Gifted Studies, DLO, the Herald, the University Farm, and when they look at revenue streams, that is also a source of how does it shore up the university. So at one point, we're giving it back to a department as an incentive, and in the other part, we don't have it as a revenue stream to address the agencies. So that's one. And then two, this whole dynamic of this pension liability has not been out at our feet before until it happened over last couple of years. And so that really was a phantom expense that existed out there all along, and the agency's now being forced to look into it. And then the last thing that I'll point out is this, there has been some press recently that I don't really understand, is this expense that our debt for our capital expenditures in buildings and grounds and expansion of external campuses is somewhere out of line, and it is not in comparison to. And so I think that press needs to be suppressed because it gives a success that we've enjoyed over the last several years as a bad light, and that shouldn't be because it's not true. Our debt is manageable in comparison to our peers.
In fact, let me echo something that John said. That's true. I think that, and as you probably know, the first or second thing they'll look at it, what your debt capacity is, and they look at ours and see how favorable it is.
It is.
And what the good ratios are, and that starts out to be a very positive element to the rating process or within that formula. I couldn't agree more with that, John. I think you're right.
Thank you, John. Those are absolutely valid points. The frustrating irony here is that the budget cuts that have the potential to compromise our bond strength are being used to shore up the state's bond strength by paying down the pension fund obligation or putting a down payment in. So they're taking money from the universities to put a modest down payment toward the pension fund debt with the intention of improving ratings, and it creates a precarious position for us, not just in dealing with the real reality of the budget cuts, but affecting the bond strength of this state agency. Mm-hmm. So there's some ironies here that are very real, and we got to work our way down.
Anything else in the bond world? What's the next information item?
Quarterly
internal audit report.
Ms. Miller?
Fun stuff.
You play a game than this. We're not going to have a game. We're going to have an Easter egg hunt. I'm just kidding. We're not going to do that.
You promised me you weren't going to do that.
I have too much to talk about, so we'll get on with that. Same thing we always do. We're going to do the time analysis on our completed projects for the quarter. And some of those are audits, so we have recommendations that we'll go through, and then it's almost the end of the fiscal year, so we'll talk about what's left, and hopefully we'll have a good percent complete by the end of the year for our audit plan. And it looks good to me, but we'll see how it falls out. But so our time analysis, we do have four completed projects to talk about. The overtime that was an audit. And out of that, we had six recommendations that were the result of that audit. And you can see we worked really hard on that. I mean, talking budget versus actual, the red is the actual. We worked really, really hard. The IRB compliance audit is also something that we'll discuss in the next few slides. And there were two recommendations out of that project. The NCAA football, that's that ticket reconciliation that we do every year. And we do that in accordance with the NCAA bylaw that talks about paid attendance. At WKU, we are required to have 15,000 in paid attendance, and that's on a rolling two-year basis. This year, we were at 15,710 in paid attendance. Last year at this time, we were talking about this same subject, and we were at 14,000. It was below the 15, but luckily it's on a rolling 2 years, so we are in compliance. And the next one was an ad hoc request, and it was a management review. And out of that management review, we had five recommendations. And I don't know if you recall, I think prior December, not last December, but the year before, we talked about the difference between a management review and an audit. And the management review is more of an internal product that someone can request so that it's not getting issued out to the board. It's more of a process improvement project. So that's what this one was. And we did have five recommendations. Those recommendations, being a management review, they are not formally tracked, and we do not require action plans. But with an audit, we do formally track those recommendations, and we do have required action plans for those. And I mentioned the first two on there, campus police overtime and the IRB compliance. Those were audits. This is the campus police overtime audit. We have three recommendations. I won't go through everyone. I mean, I'll go through everyone, but I won't read it verbatim. If you have any questions, stop me, please. The first one is basically just training for the employees on what the difference is between flex time and comp time and which one is allowed on per policy on this campus. The second one, if you go down there to the police department and look at their time clock, it's old, almost ancient. I'm not sure how long it's been there. I think it's been there for a long time. Some of it is very manual on how they keep their time. So we just recommended that they update that to a more modern version that would possibly have reporting out of that time clock and also count their hours electronically and not manually. So that was one of the top ones, I believe. The next one is just, we were talking about possibly limiting the number of hours someone may work within a 24-hour period or within a week. You know, somebody might sign up and continue to sign up for overtime and they become exhausted, so you have a risk of being exhausted on the job and you not being able to perform adequately. So we wanted to address that. Put something in their handbook to say that we could cap those hours if possible. The next one is just the process of approving those times. We had some issues with they weren't being approved timely, so we wanted to implement a better process for that. Review employer expenses annually. They work events for the athletics department, and the athletics department reimburses them. They have a contract. They get dollar for dollar of the time. They also get a percentage to cover the fringe benefits that are associated with that overtime. So we want them to make sure that percentage that they are charging is adequate to cover those expenses. And they would be checking with the appropriate personnel. So that's another process they will be putting in place. And the last one is also very important. They have one person that knows how to process their overtime. And so we recommend that they cross-train someone else to know how to do that in case that person decides not to show up one day. If I have any questions, I'm going to do that.
One question. I think it did. Your audit look at where we were staff-wise with police officers and others.
We put in the background how many we have, and I think it's approximately 25 officers, and they have the capacity to have 30.
Okay.
We do know that they have some turnover issues, and they have some competition within the other units in this county and city. But we didn't formally do any kind of analysis like that.
Kind of following up on what he said, though, when you limit the number of hours personnel may work, is it, I'm sure there's some people that sign for overtime, but there are times that I believe people are required to work overtime in order to be able to cover everything that's needed. So is there adequate personnel to be able to do that without putting in limits?
Brian Kuster.
I can answer some of that for you, Tamela. One of the things that we found during this audit is some officers were working 16, 18 hours straight, and that was our concern, is when someone is working those many hours, you know, they do get exhausted. So it's looking at limiting the number of hours they can work in a row. And we are looking at a couple different options to help us with some of our special events, especially with athletics. And then we also been working with Dr. Capps doing a organizational audit survey of the university police to kind of get a better feel for what some of the issues are, because right now there is a high turnover rate and something that's very concerning.
Well, I applaud you looking out for those officers, but I also want to make sure, you know, we are adequately staffed.
Yes.
In order to do what we need to do. So
any other questions on this one?
There was a pay increase for police in the governor's proposed budget, and I don't know whether that survived in the House and Senate, but I'm sending Robin a text right now to find
it
out.
It did in the Senate.
It is still?
Yes.
Okay.
It is. Yeah. $4,000.
That would include, I mean, it's for state police, but it would include our police as well.
Yes.
But it wasn't in the House, was it?
Clarification. Thank you.
The other audit is the IRB audit, compliance audit. IRB is Institutional Review Board, and that is a board that's in place to approve research of subjects. And that's me learning when I did this. I had no idea what IRB stood for. So it was very interesting to learn, and it's not just it's not just the body, but also the mind, which is something else I also learned. So if you're doing a survey, you have to get that approved through the IRB. one person that's over the administration of the IRB, and he's very good at what he does. He has a centralized database that's specifically for IRB research. So it is a database that is from the start to the finish of requesting approval, filling that out to the IRB members, and then them actually approving that specific research, and all of that documentation is in one centralized location, which I thought was really great. He's actually training someone now to be his backup also, because right at this moment, that person is not in place as far as being cross-trained for the whole process. The two recommendations that came out of that are, one, the webpage. It has a lot of information that is good information. Some things you have to kind of know where to go to get to, so we just recommended that some of that be more readily accessible to those users that would need to know that information. And the other one is just to further promote the actual purpose of the IRB. And I'm sure that most people that are in that type of research know about it, but we just wanted to make sure that that word is getting out there and that they're being educated on what that is. That one.
Yes, just one. I'm not quite sure, you know, I'm not familiar enough with how that was approached, but in the last recommendation, does that suggest a lack of information that is out there on the part of IRB, or a lack of understanding on the part of the user? I mean, are there issues that result in that?
Are you talking about the further promote?
I'm talking about purpose and function.
Well, when we asked him how do people know that it's out there, the answer was it's by word of mouth. And a lot of the people that are going to be involved in this are PIs that are doing that type of research, have been through it before, and then their sponsors. They have where they're having to do approvals for dual signature approvals, where some student may be doing some research and their sponsor has to know about it.
I guess I wasn't asking so much how people know it exists. Is there a confusion existing about purpose and function? Not about availability,
so.
But is there?
No, I don't think
okay.
so. No.
I just wondered if that suggested that there was a confusion about purpose and function, and there is not.
Okay. Anybody else? This one? And this time. Okay, so it's almost the end of fiscal year, and it's going by really fast. Right now, here's our three buckets that we have that are kind of in progress. Lab safety is still in review, and the tuition management system audit is actually being issued today, so you'll get a copy of that today. And so we're progressing, I think, really well. And in progress, payroll process audit, that report's being drafted right now. And then we have the ongoing procurement change fund that will be one big report at the end of the year. We've started doing some planning work on the WKU farm, and that is a management review. And we've also started some pre-planning on the athletic ticket box office. And that's, I believe that one is basically scoped to be safety of assets in that box office area. And then, of course, the WKU store will be a full audit. So that's what's left. And if you have any questions, one thing I do want to mention, all of this, we're also doing the risk assessment that we do annually. And we're gearing up to start that process as well so that we can create the next year's audit plan.
In the paper, it mentioned, the Daily News mentioned about this new WKU store down at the RAP downtown.
Uh-huh.
Will that be a separate audit and monitored, or will that be under the overall umbrella of the WKU store?
It will be. It'll be considered a separate entity from the WKU store.
And it'll have its own profit and loss and
right.
so forth.
Right, exactly.
Anything else? Thank you, Jennifer. And the last?
Yeah,
last
our item. Last item that stands between us and a break. But we're pleased to present a short report on the Graves-Gilbert Clinic operation on the WKU campus. As required by the contract, they give us an annual report. And you can tell it was written by Graves-Gilbert rather than us. But I also wanted to give them an opportunity to toot their horn and brag on what they've accomplished in the first year. Obviously, you know, the financial impact has been significant for us. This operation has been very successful from Graves-Gilbert's standpoint. We received the contract called for the first $200,000 in net profit to be held by Graves-Gilbert. The next $100,000 to be distributed to WKU. So they did reach that target, and we received a check for $100,000. So from a financial perspective, that's very good news. From an operational standpoint, if you have a self-operated health services clinic or a privatized, either way, you're going to have a small percentage of students, parents, patients that are perhaps are going to have a gripe every once in a while or a complaint about service. I think that the operation, the fact that the complaints have been minimal, you get one every once in a while, but it doesn't matter who operates it, I think that will happen. So I think the transition was extremely smooth, and I think the university's needs to address the needs specifically of students have been addressed in a very professional manner.
Any questions? Anybody? Comments? Questions?
I have one.
John?
Did our equipment and all of that part of the contract all get resolved?
Yes, it did.
Thank you.
I think the biggest issue was the x-ray equipment, and that one we decided that we would allow athletics to continue having use for it, and as it needs to be replaced, then it will become a Graves-Gilbert expense.
I was hoping some of them might be here. That I didn't realize psychiatric services were offered both at Bowling Green and Glasgow campuses.
We're very proud of that. That's a very important variable that we had in the contract and wanted to see that they could address. Yeah, we could have invited Mr. Thorne, but I know his enthusiasm, and perhaps the agenda might have lasted longer than we might have had time for. He's very proud of this operation. And fact is, you'll see him there frequently. He drops in management.
Anything else? Mr. Chair, that's the committee, the Finance and Budget Committee.
Okay, before we go into student affairs, let's take a short 10-minute break.